Welcome, everyone, to episode 267 of Some Like It Scott. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Shelton, and this week we're coronating the end of Oscar season with a full discussion of what happened at the 96th Academy Awards, the highs, the lows, the jokes, and the gaffes. With me, of course, I have my co-host, Scott Harvey. Scott, how are you doing today? I don't see your statuette anywhere, so I'm wondering, is there an issue at the Dolby Theater last night getting yours engraved? What happened?
Yeah, it was actually lost on the check baggage at the airport, Scott, because
wow.
as it so happens, I was not at the Academy Awards, shockingly enough, but I was on a plane. It seems, you know, March just always happens to be like a really busy time of year for me. And it seems like I always half the time end up having to find backdoor ways to watch the Oscars because I'm in the middle of something else. And in this case, it was flying back from a mock trial tournament in Minnesota. And so I was banking on Delta Airlines having their live TV available. And they did. So I really appreciated that. I was able to watch pretty much all of the show, a few interruptions from the pilot, particularly during Jimmy Kimmel's monologue at the beginning. Yeah. Unfortunately. So I didn't hear much of that because you know how it is. They just freeze the TVs.
Yeah.
And then they also play the security video for like 5 minutes, which was very annoying. But yeah, perfect. No, I was able to see the telecast. And it was a nice way to pass the time on my longer flight, certainly, and made me forget for a few hours about how exhausted I was.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to get into this in a second, but I enjoyed it. I did the thing that we tried to do last year, which was go to Film Society at Lincoln Center's Oscars party for people who are patrons under 40. I was able to do this year. I went with a buddy from work. We had a great time. It's a really good setup there. You've been to the facility where, like, the Lincoln Center facility before, Scott. I know we've seen a couple movies. Yeah. They use the amphitheater. So, like, you know how when you walk in and then there's like pathways to the left and right to go down into like the different theaters, but there's the amphitheater right in front of you. They use the amphitheater and they have the like cafe restaurant, like small restaurant where they had a buffet for food. It was a very nice production. The food was quite good. They had rotating. They had the full meal at the beginning, and then they had desserts. And then for whatever reason, they had chips and guac after dessert. So it was like a really strange ordering of food, but one that I did enjoy. And they had a very nice touch where in the dessert display, they had cookies with, like, you know how you can like screen print on icing or what, like edible screen printing icing on cookies. So they had all the different Best Picture nominees.
Nice.
So I managed to stand there in front of everyone in line and take every single Oppenheimer cookie and kept it. No, I'm kidding. But that, that was a very nice touch.
That does remind me of when I went to that Oscar party at Aperture in Winston-Salem several years ago. And at like 10 p.m. or something, probably when they came by with the chips and guac for you, they came by with pizza. Some guy just like walked in with some pizzas from like down the street and was like, "You guys doing pizza?" I was like, "If you're offering."
We're doing pizza. Yeah.
I'm thinking we're doing it. Yeah.
And then the next morning, your body said consequences or whatever.
No, I was 24 years old or something.
Yeah, it was different back in the day. The
old decrepit man that I am now. But I'm glad you enjoyed it, Scott. I hope to attend with you someday. It sounds like a great time.
Yeah. No, I wasn't exactly sure like how good the whole production would be, but it was definitely well done. I'm not going to sit here and say it was a full house, but it was crowded enough to be rowdy. So like the first time the crowd, which was early in the show, to be fair, the first time the crowd really got involved was when The Boy and the Heron won for Best Animated Feature, which was, you know, like the third or fourth award given out. It was very early in the ceremony, maybe even the second award now that I'm thinking about it. And that got people involved. People were excited during that. And then any time like a movie that was at the New York Film Festival won, people like when Anatomy of a Fall won, it was that people were excited about that for original screenplay. So it was a really good atmosphere, a good vibe. And, you know, probably the ideal Oscars viewing experience if you're not in person at the ceremony. But I mean, maybe even better than in person at the ceremony. Who ever knows how some of those things are.
You know, they're really doing whatever they can, I guess, to get people to pay attention to these below the line awards.
Yeah, let's save that. I have a whole section in my run of show that's about the production itself. So all the accoutrements, all the bits and whatnot. So I'll keep my powder dry on that. But why don't we go ahead and start talking about the show? Obviously, your experience watching it was, I don't want to say unorthodox, because you know people watch things on planes, but not your preferred viewing environment for the show, and it did have its limitations. Of course, you weren't able, like you mentioned, to hear the full monologue, and you had various interruptions throughout the show. But overall, all things considered, what did you think of this year's ceremony? Was it an improvement? Was it an overall good show? Less so, big areas for improvement you see. What did you feel about this year's production?
Yeah, I mean, on the whole, trying to look at this from a 50,000 foot view, sure. I do think they made some positive changes, maybe. I think the show ran pretty quickly, I guess.
Yeah. It was shorter than last year's show by quite a bit.
Barely over 3 hours. There wasn't really a portion that I felt like dragged a whole lot. And so that was nice to see. Some people are in two minds about it. I know you weren't a huge fan of it, Scott. I kind of liked what they did with the acting awards, with bringing out the former winners to sort of describe the performances and compliment the actors. Mm-hmm. You know, is it just, you know, kissing up to these people? Is it just stroking their egos? Yeah, but I mean, that's just what the Academy Awards is in general, I think. And I think from like a historical, you know, movie fan perspective, it was cool to see, like, you know, these different generations of actors interacting with each other, because there were some, you know, situations where you could tell that the person who was giving the little speech, you know, they wrote it themselves, or, you know, they were speaking from the heart, really. And it was an authentic,
just reading off a teleprompter, basically.
Yeah. Like Forrest Whitaker was, you look at that and you wonder how he ever won an Academy Award, because his reading of that was just painful to watch, honestly. But, you know, other examples like Nicolas Cage, for example, talking about Bradley Cooper was great.
I mean, that was amazing. I think I was going to save this till later, but I'm happy. I was mixed on it. I think I like it in theory, and I think the production of it itself works well. Like I like the big pillars where they have like the images of the nominees and the people presenting. Like I liked that element of it, and there were certainly some that worked really well. I think you've cited a couple there, like Nicolas Cage was a standout. I honestly thought that for the best supporting actress, the first award of the night, I thought that most of the people there did a good job. And it really felt like, to what you were saying, a lot of them were speaking from the heart, that they had some sort of connection either directly with the person they were introducing, or they watched the film and it clearly had an effect on them and they were talking about that effect. However, I think then there was other points later in the show, more pronounced, that it really felt like some people did not either feel comfortable with what they were saying, or didn't write it them because they didn't write it themselves, or for whatever reason, or just really didn't read it beforehand. And that is when it worked less. Like, you know, it's you can feel the difference between the ones that are from the heart, as you put it, and the ones that were more phoned in. Unfortunately, I think in the grand scheme of things, I thought that there were more that felt off than felt locked in that respect. And yeah, it some people just couldn't clear the barrier of making it feel genuine in a way that wasn't gassing people up or blowing smoke up their ass. And that's where I sort of struggled a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and this was something that they actually did about 15 years ago now. It was the 2009 ceremony. And it was kind of, from my memory of watching clips and stuff, it was kind of a similar, you know, issue. You had people like Alan Arkin, who was supposed to introduce Philip Seymour Hoffman, and called him Seymour Philip Hoffman on stage. And then, but then you had Tim Robbins, who again appeared this year. He was talking about Morgan Freeman, because Morgan Freeman was nominated that year for Invictus, and he told a very amusing story about the two of them on the set of The Shawshank Redemption. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, I guess, with this sort of approach. But it was interesting to see them try something new that I didn't feel like distracted from the overall purpose of the show and enjoyment of the show. I think there were moments, look, you know, moving on, I think there were moments of sort of condescending, pandering, you know, whatever you want to call it, that the Oscars is known to do, you know, bring out Bad Bunny to present the International Film Award, just like to say, just as if to say, hey, young people, this is something you like, right?
I mean, he's been in movies.
He has been in movies. Fair. Yeah. He has been in movies. Wasn't he just in Argyle, I think?
He was in Bullet Train last year or the year before.
Okay, maybe I'm just thinking of Bullet Train, but
anyway. Yeah, I don't know about Argyle. He might have been. I'm not sure.
They're the same movie to me in my head, honestly. But you know, stuff like that was annoying, but it wasn't as obnoxious as it has been in past years with, like, you know, the fan favorite award or whatever, and Zack Snyder's Justice League winning and Flash entering the speed.
I mean, that's an all-timer.
Yeah. But
Academy Award winning Minimata, the Johnny Depp movie.
Yes. But then, Scott, you know, what it really comes down to is, you know, for me at least, were the winners? Was I happy with the winners, right? Like, I think ultimately that is the major factor in deciding whether or not I liked the ceremony. And for a while, I was mostly happy with the winners. There were a few things that I was, you know, slightly disappointed with. I don't love the American Fiction win for Best Original Screenplay, you know, but I wasn't all hot and bothered about it. And then we had the Best Actress presentation. And yes, it is true that I have not seen Poor Things. And so maybe my anger is, you know, to make of that what you will. But I was very, very frustrated and disappointed with Lily Gladstone not winning the award for Killers of the Flower Moon. You know, I think it's probably the best performance of the year. I think it would have been a powerful moment, powerful speech, all of that. But the Oscars just can't get out of their own way sometimes. And unfortunately, you know, while the show on the whole was more hits than misses, I think that did kind of sour the experience for me. You know, maybe part of it was that I was very, very tired and a little bit grouchy and everything when I was watching this. And it was the end of the show when that happened. And so, you know, maybe I overreacted slightly. I didn't even end up watching Best Picture after that because I knew I was going to win. But yeah, when I think back on these Oscars, I think that's the first thing that I'm going to think of, unfortunately. And it's not a happy thought. It's not a happy memory.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that I don't feel the same way. I mean, I share your disappointment in the win, although I would encourage you to watch Poor Things because Emma Stone's performance is fantastic, even if I'm ultimately not someone who... On our award show next week, I probably won't be awarding Emma Stone best performance. But frankly, I won't be awarding Lily Gladstone that either. And so I'm not particularly bothered. I think it is disappointing. I did feel that it was coming as soon as Poor Things. Like, I think I texted you as soon as the makeup and hairstyle was given out. I'm like, I don't feel good about Emma. I don't feel good about Lily Gladstone. I mean, I'd been like stressing, but contemplating that specific award for like the whole 24 hours before it, as I was filling out I had submitted a ballot earlier in the week and I submitted another one Saturday night. And on that one, I ended up putting Emma Stone because I was no longer convinced that Lily Gladstone was going to win. So I wasn't as surprised, but I was certainly dismayed. And I think you could see that even for a minute or for a second on Emma Stone's face as well when she you know, her name was announced. But I think most people, thankfully, are not going to think that about this award show, because most people are going to think about it as Oppenheimer's year. And even though I think it's tough for people like us, or for people who are like really looking at the precursors and looking at things like betting lines on who's going to, like, what are the races that are still undecided. But I think the average person, like, I don't know. I don't think the viewership numbers have been yet released. I'm just checking my phone right now to see if they have been. I think that they have not yet been released. I'll look when we have a second here to see if that's true or not. But I think the good news is that I was talking to some people today who I work with, but who do not follow these things as closely. And they were talking about, oh, I was really shocked that Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win any awards. But my main takeaway was that, like, I got to go rewatch Oppenheimer because it won 7 awards. So I think that most people who aren't as tuned in, and let's say 20 million people watched the show last night. Maybe that's too many. I don't know what it is. But in the grand scheme of things, people who are like terminally online thinking of these is like fewer than like 1 million of those people probably. Right. So I think the overarching consensus about the Oscars, I literally just got a notification. This is amazing. 19.5 million viewers, like literally New York Times notification just now about the viewership. And unbelievable. That's calling in a favor with my buddies across town. Right there.
You gotta love that.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, of the 20 million people who watched last night, you know, less than 5% probably are people who are as online or thinking about these things as we are.
Sure.
And that's not to say that these people don't share that dismay if they watched Killers of the Flower Moon and really appreciated the performance. I don't know what like the national consensus. I'm not totally convinced like many people have seen Killers of the Flower Moon, frankly. In like the sort of general population, obviously, it's, you know, cinephiles almost certainly have, and hopefully people in the Academy have as well, although maybe the film didn't resonate as much. But luckily, I think that it really ultimately still will be Oppenheimer's Oscars, because it felt like an avoidable gaffe, but I was like really worried. I mean, I wasn't really worried about this, but I was like, why are they putting Best Actress, but like after director, right before Best Picture?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a big moment. Just put it after actor. Just like have it after actor. Then you can go to a commercial break after it, and then you can finish the award show with, you know, Oppenheimer's sort of coronation on Chris Nolan's Best Director win and the Best Picture win for Oppenheimer. It's just like, you're not going to get criticism about trying to like game the show like you did in COVID when you put Best Actor last, so Chadwick Boseman could win his posthumous Oscar after he passed away, and Anthony Hopkins wins, he's not there, the award show goes to credits. Like, it's obviously not that level of gaffe, and it's not that level of gaffe related to Moonlight and La La Land from the 2018 award show for the movies of 2017. Is that right? Yes. But it just felt like an avoidable thing when the race was as tight as it was. And yeah, luckily we still had the 7 awards. And again, to kind of close the loop for us, like, the reason why the overriding memory for you is because it felt like all the awards Oppenheimer won were in the bag. Like, there were no real contest happening in those categories. I, like, with the exception of maybe Cillian Murphy, which, like, I still had some anxious energy about even as the award was being announced. But I mean, frankly, the holdovers wasn't as strong because of the internet. Like, the international body was clearly the overarching theme of the night, which I have for us to talk about in just a minute. But because of that, you know, there wasn't a lot of strength in the holdovers to challenge, you know, Cillian Murphy or Oppenheimer in other areas. So it does really ultimately feel like Oppenheimer's award show. I thought the ceremony as a whole, just to go to my high level thoughts, was a really good one. I'll be honest, I don't really remember last year for reasons that don't really matter. It was kind of, I did watch it. It's kind of a blur. I don't fully remember everything that happened. Everything Everywhere All at Once, of course, winning a bunch of awards last year. I think it won eight or so awards or something like that last year, which was not my favorite film, especially in some of the categories that it won in. And so I think last year, to your point around the show feeling like some of its awards, ultimately, I felt like the awards I was more satisfied or more pleased with. For the awards that I didn't care as much about, they sort of went one way or the other. I didn't really feel strongly whether Poor Things or Barbie won all the below the line awards. Like, it didn't really matter to me that much. And so I appreciated that Oppenheimer had its night. There were certainly some setbacks. I still agree that the that you know, the Best Actress award didn't go the direction that I thought it would and should have gone earlier, you know, a couple weeks ago. But overall, it feels like, you know, when you combine a lot of the production elements of the film, like I thought, we'll talk more about these things later, but, you know, I thought a lot of those elements worked, with the one exception. Really, my only major complaint about the film was what we talked about a few minutes ago, about the production, was what we talked about with the introductions to the acting awards. I mean, that was my only real structural complaint with the show. And so overall, I felt like it was a really strong outing this year. And I think that if they could repeat that next year, you know, with a few tweaks here and there, I think they found a formula that can really work well. Obviously, it helps to have, you know, something as electric as I'm Just Ken in the final act of the show. It helps to have, you know, different bits like actually work. But I think what they did such a good job with is leaving, like, it's not that they completely disappeared all of the bits, but for the, like, you know, 75 to 80% of the bits ultimately worked for me. And they didn't feel overdone or overwrought for them, you know, in a majority of cases. So it's maybe a function of just, you had the right movies and the right stars who could deliver the right sort of tete-a-tete in the bits and whatnot. And, you know, it didn't feel like too cheesy or hammy too often. So maybe they just sort of found the right alchemy to balance all of the things that we want balanced in the show without, you know, almost sort of detracting or taking away. It's not perfect. There are still things that do detract in certain moments and that maybe were ill-conceived, which we can talk about. But on the whole, I thought that they got it more right this year than they have in many of the recent years. And for that, I think that we should acknowledge and should award them for that, because more shows like tonight, I think, will all be happier. So Scott, I sort of described just now the award show really feeling like Oppenheimer's year. It won the 7 awards: Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Editing, Best Score, Best Cinematography. It probably won all the awards it was truly strongly favored for. You could maybe argue that it was upset in Best Sound, which went to Zone of Interest. We'll talk about that in a minute, Scott, but pretty chalky for Oppenheimer. What did you think of its performance at the show? Do you think that it was just more or less as expected? Do you think, were you surprised that it didn't go higher to 8 or 9 or 10? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, one of my major takeaways is going to be, and I think this kind of ties into what you're saying about the structure of the show and maybe some of the questions you have about how they did the end. But it didn't necessarily seem like the Oppie sweep that everyone was predicting, right? That everyone thought could be possible. 7 wins is nothing to sniff at. It's the same number of wins that Everything Everywhere All at Once had last year. But I think due to various factors, including sort of the structure of the show, it stopped it from feeling like it was just an avalanche of Oppenheimer wins back to back to back. And even again, like you're saying, towards the end, you have Christopher Nolan winning, but then you have that broken up with Emma Stone's win before you get to Best Picture, right? They don't even back-to-back those at the end like they traditionally would. And I just think that it is the Oppenheimer Oscars, and I think you're right, it will be remembered as such. But one of my major takeaways is that I think, I don't know if we'll ever see something like what Titanic or Lord of the Rings Return of the King was able to do ever again, right? Because I think the Oscar voters seem to be more aware than ever now about spreading the wealth, if you will. And particularly this year, when Oppenheimer was, you know, just absolutely dominating on all the awards cycles and was just the favorite in so many categories and really never lost any strength throughout all of awards season, I think, you know, some of the Oscar voters maybe went to cast their votes and thought, you know, not that I don't like Oppenheimer, but there were other movies that I liked besides Oppenheimer as well. And I want to see them win, whether it's, you know, Poor Things winning for costume design and hair, makeup and hairstyling, whether it's The Zone of Interest winning for Best Sound, whether it's American Fiction winning for Best adapted screenplay. You know, I just think that there was clearly an effort not to have it be that Oppie sweep, if you will. Now, that does not take away from the accomplishment that Oppenheimer achieved, because at the end of the day, you know, although there was this effort to spread the wealth a little bit, the voters went with Oppenheimer in sort of the big categories, the categories where it mattered, if you will. They gave it its flowers: best picture, best director, best actor, best supporting actor, you know, all big above the line categories. And Oppenheimer took home the awards that we expected it to take home. And so, you know, I do think on the whole, I will think of it as Oppenheimer's Oscars as well. You know, maybe it's a secondary concern for me, like I said, because of how I felt about the best actress issue. But, you know, I think it didn't quite reach the levels of domination that we expected, not because it couldn't have or it wasn't deserving of all those awards, but I think because the voters, it seems, are more cognizant of giving everything to one movie. And like I said, I don't know that we'll ever see that sort of onslaught again of something like Titanic winning 11, 12 Oscars in the same ceremony. I think if there was ever going to be a contemporary time for us to see that, it probably would have been with a movie like Oppenheimer. But, you know, it comes up short in a few of those categories. And, you know, it easily could have won those categories and I would have been satisfied. But also, as a movie fan, I can understand the need to spread the wealth. And maybe I don't agree with American Fiction winning, for example, or, you know, again, I haven't seen Poor Things. But I did like hearing other names called during the evening, even though, you know, that Oppenheimer was one of my top three favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, I also think it's just a function of the Oscars becoming more diverse. And I mean that in sort of like all senses, right? Oftentimes people will talk about diversity around the Oscar so white element thing. And obviously Oppenheimer is, you know, obviously a very white movie. It's about,
yes,
you know, a white scientist made by a white director and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the way down the line. But I think it's just really hard to do something like Titanic or Return of the King did 20, 25 years ago, because there's a lot more people in the Academy now. And those people are intentionally from more diverse backgrounds than old white male Hollywood types.
Yeah.
You know, so I just think that it's like structurally difficult, not just that people want to award more movies or that people think that, oh, there's a bunch of movies I like this year, so we're going to spread the wealth around. I'm sure there are some people who think like that, but I think there are also, just by nature of having so many more people, it's like really hard for 9,000 people, which I think is roughly what the Academy voting body is now, to like generate consensus in so many categories around one film. It just feels really hard to do if people are taking their job seriously, right? Like if you, Scott Harvey, member of the Producers Guild, if you take your job seriously around, I'm going to get to 80 to 90% of the films nominated in the major categories, right? Like things. So like not necessarily concerning ourselves with live act, the, like the shorts and things like that. Like I'm going to try to watch all these movies and I'm going to really think about what I think the best score or the best sound or the best production or the best makeup. Like if you just genuinely think about those things, I think it makes sense to me that 9,000 people are going to have a lot of consensus in some things, right? Like Oppenheimer, Everything Ever All at Once, like these movies still won 7+ awards, like you mentioned, but it's harder to rack up 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, awards, you know, 10+ awards, we'll say, in those things like you used to. And I just think that's because it's just the body itself has a lot more different perspectives. So do I think that Oppenheimer should have won more than 7? Yes. Probably adapted screenplay is the first place I'd point to, where I don't have too many qualms with Zone of Interest winning sound. I mean, that literally is the whole point of the film, is the sound. And whether you think that it's good or not is a separate conversation, but if you believe that it is successful in what it set out to do, it makes sense that you think it's the best at what it did, because the conceit of the film is basically what the award is. So that makes sense to me. And then on the adapted screenplay side, like, I enjoyed American Fiction, but I would agree overall. Luckily, that wasn't necessarily as big of an issue in other categories. I think beyond that, like, sure. I just don't really, like, I get it. Poor Things is production design. It's costumes. It's makeup and hairstyle. Like, I get it. You know, I was a little surprised that it won all three. And we'll talk about that, you know, coming up hot right after I finish this thought. But really, at the end of the day, like, I can't really complain that much. Like, yeah, I liked Oppenheimer. I mean, Oppenheimer is a, you know, so often you see these period type pieces, which of course Oppenheimer is, awarded. Poor Things has this like weird luxury of being like a sci-fi fantasy film that's also a period piece that has like some like steampunk, you know, Euro element that is, that sort of fuses a couple different like almost like sentiments or sensibilities of those, of the sort of creative below the line branches. And I find that really interesting, and maybe also lends itself to, you know, one angle of why it found so much support below the line. But luckily, you know, Oppenheimer, I didn't really expect it to win much more than seven. And it still felt like a sweep because it won all the major like the biggest categories that it was supposed to. I think that if you had, for example, Cillian Murphy fall off, like that would have felt much more like a, you know, like an injury to the Oppenheimer narrative than Oppenheimer losing Best Sound to Zone of Interest. Just for me, thinking about how the night went as a whole. And I mean, maybe this is it, Scott. Maybe seven is the number you can realistically hope to get to at this point. Because you're right, I do agree with like your last thought that you had said there. This is the kind of movie that can do it, right? Titanic, Return of the King, these are massive blockbusters that have huge technical prowess, right? That's what Oppenheimer is, right? It's a huge blockbuster. It's not IP like Lord of the Rings, of course, but it has huge, it is a historical biopic. It has huge technical prowess with these like tour de force performances from a few legends of Hollywood, like Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, maybe Cillian Murphy and Emily Blunt aren't quite in that camp, but there's these big performances, right? And it only got seven. And so maybe that is just what the top end of the spectrum realistically is. And maybe every once in a while there'll be one movie that wins eight or nine these days, or something really special comes along, but it's sort of the upper limit of what's possible, it seems like. And I say that, in Dune Part Two will maybe win 12 awards next, you know, this time next year, which would be pretty cool, but you know, who knows.
Yeah, no, I mean, it does need to be something like of the scale of Oppenheimer, which I think Dune Part Two is, but I don't know if.
Yeah, how crazy. I mean, people talk about it like at this point all the time, but I was honestly really feeling it last night during the monologue when Kimmel was talking about like these big movies, like in spite of all the strikes, like the year in film was, it produced so many quality pictures that people could really rally behind. And I'm like, man, Dune Part Two almost came out last year. Like, that's crazy. I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that would have made for a really interesting Oscars battle. Although, you know, I'm not going to get ahead of myself as far as Dune Part Two and the Oscars. I mean, I think it will certainly, based on the first film, it will certainly be a strong contender in
below the line
categories. But it remains to be seen whether it will have the juice in the above the line categories. I don't know. I still would be surprised that if the Academy takes something like it seriously enough to consider it in, you know, those big categories like that.
Yeah, I think I love how we're about to make a segment.
I know.
Complete. Part Two. This is amazing. This is exactly
complete
what I wanted.
Yeah.
But what I gotta say one thing about this, and I'll be so curious to see how this ages in, you know, 11 months time when we're a month leading into the 2025 Academy Awards. But I think that it's really interesting. I agree with you on the whole, but I'm really interested to see, because this film's not going to make $1 billion+ like Barbie or Oppenheimer did. No mistake about that. But like Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, like these are bona fide young stars, the kinds of stars that the Oscars, like 500,000, a billion % like want at their show and want like eyeballs on. And you know, whether you nominate, like, you know, whether you end up like a Marty Scorsese film with 10 nominations and zero awards is obviously a different question. But like, there's so much incentive to have this thing. And I know it's not as widely popular or will be as widely seen as Barbie or Oppenheimer, but there's like so much incentive to get them there. And like the, and there is this like real dark human story that's happening inside the core of this IP sci-fi genre film. And the Academy, as we well know, has like always struggled to recognize genre in like a really meaningful way. But like Denis Villeneuve is like one of the most serious filmmakers in Hollywood, obviously of genre, these days mostly in genre films, between Blade Runner and you know, Arrival's not quite genre, but it, obviously it bridges on genre. And I'm really curious if the Academy, because of the sort of magnitude of the film and the components below the line and the stars above the line, will like that Dune part, could Dune Part Two be one of the exceptions to this weird thing and manage to make more noise? Obviously that's 12 months after the release of the film, and it is so hard to maintain sort of cultural relevance at the level required to maintain a campaign for the Oscars for that long. But at the same time, you know, we don't yet really have a good sense, and that's normal, of like what's coming out in the fall this year from an awards perspective. So it's almost like a bit of a wait and see. Like even by Oppenheimer, like we knew about most of the films that ended up there. Like maybe they weren't on our radar super deeply, but like we knew about Poor Things. We knew about, you know, Past Lives had already come out. I'm just picking random films, but like, you know, Anatomy of a Fall had been at Cannes. Like we'd seen a lot of those movies, or the people had seen a lot of those movies. But this year, because the strike delay is also impacting this year, of course, like it's hard to say exactly what is going to be big. Cause like what movie from a revenue, like a box office revenue perspective, is going to be bigger than Dune Part Two. I'm not saying it's going to be the highest grossing film of the year, but like people don't, I mean, the Academy doesn't care about Minions. That'll gross more than Dune Part Two, but the Academy doesn't care about Despicable Me 4. Like I'm sure Deadpool is going to make more money than Dune Part Two, but like, obviously that film's not going to get nominated for any award that matters that deeply. So it's this like weird thing, right? Like it's probably going to be the Barbie and Oppenheimer of this year, because it's going to be the highest grossing film. That's like a serious movie in terms of awards contending, but we'll see how that shakes out. Clip this out and put it in an episode a year from now.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how this ages.
Yeah, probably terribly. All right, Scott, I think the sort of big next thing to talk about with the award show is that international body that we sort of already have been dancing around and alluding to. I'm going to sort of list off all the awards where I think we see the influence of the international body, because it's quite a number, but I think with Poor Things' strong performance, so you have those three below the line categories that we talked about already very briefly, which is best makeup and hairstyle, best costume design, best production design, in addition to, of course, the Emma Stone win in best actress. You have the two awards for the Zone of Interest. Granted, one of those is international feature, so it's, you know, we'll set that aside as if you want to talk about where the influence happens, but it did win best sound over Oppenheimer. Anatomy of a Fall won best original screenplay. Boy and the Heron beat out Spider-Verse to take home best animated feature. Godzilla Minus One beat out The Creator for best visual effects. I think these are all spots where you can see the international influence of the body rising and having more power to influence some of these closer races with films that are probably lesser seen within the general American population, and of course are less focused within Hollywood. Some of those films are still made within the Hollywood ecosystem, but by international creators who are maybe more widely loved and regarded in the international community. Scott, I think that's sort of my big takeaway from this year, is that it's like when you have films that are well regarded and well received in a general sense, and also have this really strong international flavor from creators that are respected or regarded in the international community, like your Yorgos Lanthimos, like your Jonathan Glazer, like your Hayao Miyazakis. Like those films are films that should be taken seriously. Again, maybe not quite yet in Best Picture in terms of, although Oppenheimer itself being from like a British, you know, a European, you know, or a European adjacent director, like it seems like you can't ignore that international flavor within the Academy body anymore. And I thought that I was rating it pretty well when I was filling out my ballot, but in fact, it was even stronger with some of the performances, especially with Poor Things and how, you know, Boy and the Heron and Godzilla Minus One were able to win these sort of closer, not quite coin flip, but like maybe even like they were longer odds players in those races. So what did you think of the performance of those different categories?
Yeah, I mean, it is surprising, to be honest with you. I figured that Spider-Verse would win just as sort of the fan favorite. And also factoring in that Miyazaki couldn't care less about the Oscars, and I'm sure the Academy, or at least a certain sector of the Academy, to your point, can't be too thrilled with something like that, someone who doesn't really pay any mind to the what they consider to be the hallowed Oscars.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, it clearly has an impact. And even a film like, you know, you're mentioning some examples, even like The Father, right? Not necessarily from as acclaimed a filmmaker, but a French filmmaker and Florian Zeller, right? Like you say, it does sort of have this international flavor to it, even if not a international film. You know, it steals some Oscars during its year. You think about Yorgos Lanthimos' last movie. You think about The Favourite, right? Almost the same sort of situation in the Best Actress category, where you have sort of I don't want to say the fan favorite, but like the good vibes pick, right? If you were to go in that case, it was Glenn Close, right, for The Wife, the long nominated person who had never won. In this case, it was Lily Gladstone, you know, who obviously had a lot going for her as well, too. Could have been the first Native American actress to win an Academy Award. And both times they get upset by the lead actress from the Yorgos Lanthimos movie. So you have international sectors who maybe just don't care as much about these sort of narratives, right? Like, who don't care about Glenn Close winning an Oscar for... You know,
is that a good thing or a bad thing? Just like should we care about these kinds of narratives? Shouldn't we just be voting for what we think the best performance is? I mean, this isn't a loaded question. I'm just like, this would be the comeback to the narrative piece.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you, because ultimately I think doing something else leads to unsatisfying results, like Leonardo DiCaprio finally getting an Oscar for The Revenant, right, as opposed to any of his other great performances, right? Not even that. Was that the best performance in the category that year? Probably not. Was that Leonardo DiCaprio's best performance? Probably not. But the factor of him having never won an Oscar before and it being this huge thing is able to push him over the top. And there are obviously other examples of that as well, where an actor, you know, Al Pacino wins for Scent of a Woman after so long. Like, actors winning for some of the more unimpressive roles in their filmography simply because of the narrative. And does the end justify the means? I don't know. I have weird feelings about that. And I think ultimately I agree with you that we just need to be judging this in a vacuum. And here's the movie that I like the most. Here's the performance that I like the most. That's it. And it seems like the international sector of the Academy is taking that approach. And it's leading to, you know, results like Emma Stone winning, or like Poor Things, you know, putting a little bit of a damper on this. Oh, is Oppenheimer going to get 10 or 11 awards? You know, that sort of narrative as well.
Although to be fair, I don't think Oppenheimer was the movie running second in any of those below the line categories.
Sure.
It really felt like it was Barbie or Poor Things were the two competing. I'd say it definitely put a damper on Barbie's night. For sure. I mean, the fact that Barbie was only awarded Best Original Song, I think, is maybe a little bit of a letdown. Although arguably you could say just the sheer performance of I'm Just Ken alone and the success of that, maybe it had a bigger night than some other movies that won, you know, one or two awards. But on the Leonardo DiCaprio point, I was just curious because I couldn't think of a single other nominee from that year. So just to see what you think here, Scott. Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon for The Martian, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl. What do you think?
Okay, I mean, Michael Fassbender gave a better performance than Steve Jobs for sure. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there was a number of performances that
weren't nominated. Sure. But I was just looking at the category. I'm like, you know, it's not like DiCaprio is running last in that category. On the merits of the performance.
Trumbo's a fake movie and, you know, other stuff. But Michael Fassbender certainly, I think, was a cut above what DiCaprio did there. But anyway,
that was a Jay Roach joint, wasn't
Jay
it?
Jay Roach, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm in favor of this increased international influence, right? Because, you know, maybe this year it doesn't necessarily lead to the results that I want, but... Sure. Looking at the big picture, right, it leads to Parasite winning Best Picture. It leads to movies like Drive My Car and Anatomy of a Fall getting nominated for Best Picture, which were some of the best movies of their respective years. It leads to Anatomy of a Fall winning, right?
Yeah. It leads to Everything Everywhere All at Once, though, probably winning 7 awards.
Yeah. I mean, there are positives and negatives, but on the whole, I'm not going to complain too much about Academy having a more diverse set of perspectives, right? And even if the results it produces are mixed from time to time.
I do totally agree with that point. I think that maybe we hadn't fully yet appreciated that something like Parasite, obviously the extent of Parasite has not yet really been replicated in the same way, obviously. But the implications of Parasite winning, I think, maybe were... underestimated what that actually meant for the Academy in the longer term, that was not like, yes, it was this sort of big leap forward and that hasn't, it's not like that has been replicated year after year after year at this point, but the fact that there are still the same, you know, clues and signs of that same, you know, of what happened in 20, you know, the awards for the 2019 movies is still there, which I do think it's a positive on the whole. And, you know, the fact that, I mean, I loved Across the Spider-Verse. I thought the creators' visual effects were really awesome. But it's so cool that, like, Miyazaki won another Oscar. Yeah. It's so cool that, like, Takashi Yamazaki won for Godzilla Minus One. Like, I just think that's so awesome. Like, those were the most exciting moments of the night for me because, you know, those awards were the, you know, not, you know, if not a coin flip, those people were underdogs in those categories, right? And it's those exciting moments where you have, I don't want to get like too, you know, preachy about it, right? But like the fact that you have the chance for these really acclaimed, you know, auteurs of their craft, right? Like Miyazaki, and then like you have the craft of Godzilla Minus One involved there with the visual effects, and that it's not just so rote, right? Like, Spider-Verse is an amazing film, so I feel bad almost like lumping it in with this thing, because I mean I've talked for so long this year about how much already that I love Across the Spider-Verse, and I would have been perfectly happy with it winning an Academy Award. Like, that wasn't bothered at all. But like, it's really cool that the Oscars is not ignoring that. Like, the fact, like, Boy and the Heron would not have won a decade ago. I mean, an even better film and certainly a more accessible film than Boy and the Heron was released just over a decade ago by Studio Ghibli, by Miyazaki, and that film didn't get awarded. Like,
didn't even get nominated, did it?
Isn't that crazy, Scott? Like, isn't it crazy that the biopic film doesn't get nominated, and that the absolutely weirdo animated film Boy and the Heron wins? Like, isn't that awesome? Like, that's so cool.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, it just shows what can be achieved if we branch out from one single way of thinking about movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the international body. Next year, Scott, I will have an exclusively international ballot where I have my version of events that's all international films winning awards, and then I'll have my other ballot. So we'll see how that works for me next year. Other things, you know, you talked already a little bit about your disappointment in American Fiction winning in the adapted screenplay category. So I don't think we need to spend too much more time on that. I agree. It wasn't a surprise at all. It was a pretty heavy favorite by the time the show started last night, but it was a bit flummoxed that it wasn't Oppenheimer or it wasn't Oppenheimer and Barbie competing. I was a bit flummoxed by that.
Yeah, I will just add on that point. I mean, I'm not anti-American Fiction. I think the movie is fine, but I do understand it on some level because this is it's a movie about Hollywood and to some extent, and it's the type of movie that a lot of the, you know, white people in the Academy to go away from the people that we're talking about in the international body. A lot of the white people in the Academy can watch this movie and say, you know, sort of pat themselves on the back and be like, well, I'm not doing that. Or, hey, I get it. Right. Like I'm going to award this movie because, you know, look at how much I get it. And I understand what the problem is that this movie is pointing out. Although I have some questions about how immediate, pressing, urgent, whatever the problem that the movie presents actually is. But, in today's day and age, at least. But nevertheless, I just think it's a movie that, even though it gets labeled as button pushing and provocative and all of these things, it's also a movie that I think is right down the middle to some extent for Oscar voters, and something that, again, the white voters in the Academy can vote for and feel that they've
to be clear, most of the international voters are white. I think they're very Eurocentric.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, perhaps they're included in this as well, but anyway, they can vote for it and feel, hey, you know, I did my part. I recognized a diverse movie with diverse themes, and like, yeah, hey, I'm nodding and I understand. I get it too.
I think maybe that your original point still holds though, because even though they are white Euro, like, I think that they're, I can't speak for them, right? But I could see a world in which, even though like the race dynamics of the United States are like not something that they think a ton about, right? And I do think that the dynamics of race, it varies quite a bit, I'm sure, country by country in Europe, but like it's probably just less, it's just different, right? It's not that it's less or it's more, it's just different.
And the type of story that American Fiction is satirizing of, like, the sort of
it's Hollywood.
Stereotypical, black urban story, like, is American in nature. I feel like I don't feel like that type of movie and it's
Lansing Hollywood, right? Like, it's not saying like the European film market is a problem. It's saying Hollywood producers, right? Like the people who are choosing to adapt certain kinds of books or tell certain kinds of stories, that it is like aimed at American institutions in that respect. So I enjoyed American Fiction both times I watched the film. I think it's quite funny. I do think that it's, I sort of, at the same time, I both get why it's been being awarded, right? Because I feel like it's that kind of movie, right? Where even if you're like May December too, like, it's obviously a different film, one that we liked more than American Fiction, but American Fiction, May December, those are the kinds of movies where you can see the Academy being like, I don't know what else to give you. I don't know how to, like, you don't fit anywhere else. And so I like you and I'm awarding you here. Right. Obviously May December didn't follow through on that. And I think there's a variety of probably, you know, obvious reasons why the Academy might not be awarding May December.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of movie, I guess, is more what I mean to say.
Yeah, no, for sure. It gets its flowers, and, you know, Cord Jefferson had a pretty nice speech, I will say. But
I think the only other big award that I want to talk about before we go to the production side is Davine joined Randolph. It was a slam dunk, you know, biggest lock of the night. One thing I want to say though is that it was a great award to start the night with, because I'll go ahead and say it, like, I thought her speech was the best speech of the night. I think she gave a really emotional, powerful speech, and kind of impressive because she's been giving like a different, like 300 different speeches over the entire year. And when you put her up next to Robert Downey Jr., like sort of the other person who's given probably 1,000 award speeches, like that wasn't his best speech of the award season. I still thought it was a good speech, but it's like he had a different swagger and he brought something different to that just didn't resonate as deeply as what she was talking about did. And I found it to be quite affecting. It was a great speech. And one of the highlights of the show.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also thought it was the best speech, and, you know, very personal, deeply felt. She wasn't reading off of notes or anything like that. It was just, she was speaking from the heart. Thanks her publicist, you know, just a real heartwarming speech and moment, and a performance that I liked a whole lot. So yeah, I felt like a great, it was a great way to start the show, and something that, you know, carried good feelings through a lot of the telecast.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Yeah, I agree there. The other things, the other just awards we haven't really mentioned at all yet was obviously Billie Eilish and Phineas O'Connor winning for What Was I Made For? Best Original Song for Barbie, which won award for the evening, and 20 Days in Mariupol winning for Best Documentary. Those were sort of the last two awards that we haven't alluded to at all yet. I think they were heavily expected, and to have a film like 20 Days in Mariupol winning an Oscar, you know, it feels like, you know, the Ukraine war is slowly losing steam in public consciousness. And so I wonder if this has any benefit on a more like socio-political side of things. Yeah. And I have to imagine, not a film that I saw. I didn't see it at Sundance, which is where it debuted, and it must be a really harrowing film to watch. But yeah, maybe I'll check it out in the coming weeks.
Another highlight speech for sure, too. The director or one of the filmmakers behind the movie basically stating that he would, you know, he wished he didn't have to make the movie because of what it's about and what it depicts, like, you know, is something that he wishes that his people did not have to go through. So that was a powerful moment, even though I haven't seen the movie either. And Billie Eilish winning, I mean, Billie Eilish wins every single thing she's nominated for, right? Like, it's getting kind of ridiculous at this point.
People love her. People really love her. They do,
and I get it. Like, she's a likable person. I think she is a good musician, a good singer. I don't think What Was I Made For is anything close to her best work. It wasn't one of the better songs in Barbie, in my opinion. I mean, especially when you and I don't necessarily even think I'm Just Ken was one of the best songs in Barbie, but when you stack it up next to What Was I Made For, and you compare the live performances of the two songs during, you know, the Oscars, like, you might be scratching your head as to how What Was I Made For went.
Which, to be fair, is obviously not what the Oscars are awarding, but it's a really tough look when, like, even the Oscars knows, like, what's going to get the pop is not the song that's winning Best Original Song.
And you have, you know, I'm Just Ken, maybe, like, my favorite part of the whole show, that performance, and just Ryan Gosling bringing it, performing it
100%
perfectly, you know, getting the crowd into it. You have Emma Stone and Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie and America Ferrera all there just singing along to the song with him, and everybody on their feet and smiling and everything. Like, it was a triumphant moment. And then to give it to this sort of dour Billie Eilish and Phineas track. I mean, the Best Original Song category is kind of one that's just kind of a mess, but you know, shout out to Billie Eilish, youngest person to ever have two Academy Awards.
Yeah, it's something that I think the Academy is eternally trying to figure out what to do with. To be fair, like, they didn't have the songs performed live, obviously the last couple years they did. It's just something they're still trying to figure out. I think that they know that it doesn't work perfectly, and they haven't quite figured out what it is yet, but we'll see if they come up with something new for next year. Writing out the stuff, obviously, no love for Maestro, didn't win makeup, no love for Killers of the Flower Moon. We already talked at length about the Lily Gladstone of it all. So let's talk about the production. You mentioned I'm Just Ken, absolutely electric. I mean, really, I don't mean to be like crass about it, but like, I'm listening to the Big Picture podcast, and Amanda Dobbins is talking about how the original song performances are like so boring. And I really agree with her for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, They are like, for example, they were basically like, we were treating them like a commercial break at Lincoln Center last night. People were getting up, they were going back to get more food, more drink, go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And then I'm Just Ken happens, and I'm like, everyone's so locked in. Like, it's such an amazing production, the way they did that. I think it's what they tried to do with Natu Natu last year with RRR. I think that was not quite as successful here. Like I'm Just Ken is like the best case scenario of your production working. And they like they obviously should want more performances like these for live performances in the show. But they're just like, how do you get only those kinds of songs and stuff nominated? It's like who I don't know how to do that, right? It doesn't really all add up always. But I totally agree with what you were saying around I'm Just Ken. We already talked about the acting awards nominations. Again, it's hit and miss for me. I think that there's something there, and there needs maybe to just be a different balance of how it works. It's tough, right? Because I know you have to get prior winners of the category. Like the only way, like the conceit of it is that prior winners are introducing them, right? But yeah, that is inherently limiting to find people who can speak with like the depth and genuine from the heart nature of that some people were able to capture, but others weren't. I thought the stunt coordinator and montage was misguided. I understand what they're trying to do. And it was such an amazing year, right? With John Wick 4, with Mission Impossible, with other films that I'm sure are escaping me right now, but certainly had incredible stunt work involved with them as well. And the montage is like well-meaning, but like ill-conceived. Like, you just announced a new award for casting, and you're doing a montage for stunt coordinating when everyone's been talking about needing a stunt award. You just got to figure that out. You just got to figure it out. Like, put another award in the show. I don't know what else to tell you. Like,
it just reminds me of them, like, you know, again, in past telecasts, like acknowledging certain movies from the year that they just didn't nominate. Like, I still remember, like, when the Oscars in 2020 or whatever opened with some sort of Midsommar themed thing, right? Like Midsommar, a movie that they completely, you know, just overlooked.
Blanked it.
It's the type of, you know, pandering stuff like I was alluding to back at the start of our conversation, that they want to be like, oh yeah, we get it. Like, we, you know, we're with you guys. We understand.
It's tough, right? Because the producers of the show are not the people voting on the awards. Yeah. So it's like, to be fair, it's like, it's not like the 9,000 people who voted are the ones putting on the show, but you're absolutely right. It always ends up coming off that way though. That's the problem.
It's tone deaf. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. And I think you got to work with what you got sometimes, right? Like, it's like, I mean, maybe you didn't hear this joke, but Kimmel's making he doesn't make a joke, but it's like, he acknowledges that, right, that Gerwig and Margot don't get nominated from Barbie. Everyone cheers. And he's like, you guys are the one who didn't vote for him.
Yeah,
that's like,
exactly.
Like, it's that BS, right? Like, that's the BS. Whereas I think the production of the show, right, like, is like just trying to put on a good show. It still lands in a very similar way. I agree with you, but it's like, that's like the more like nuanced complexity of what's going on, in my opinion, with like the show. And unfortunately, it just comes off wrong, right? Like, Academy producers, like the board of directors, like if you want stunt coordinating to be acknowledged in the show, like you can pass bylaws to like get it in the show. You know what I mean? Like, how do you think that happens, right? Like, it could happen. You could get it done. And that's one where it rings false. On the other side of sort of last thing before we do wrap up, Jimmy Kimmel did a great job. John Mulaney, who for reasons unbeknownst to anyone, was presenting Best Sound and just doing a pitch for why he should host the Oscars. I thought both of them did great. Mulaney absolutely crushed it. His whole Field of Dreams bit was unbelievable. I was in stitches with this Field of Dreams bit that he was doing. And really great work. He's totally cut out for it. If he's not hosting the Oscars next year, I'll be absolutely floored. And Jimmy Kimmel, I thought, in his like manyth time hosting, has once again sort of shepherded the show. I heard mixed reviews on Kimmel. I thought that he did a great job. I mean, maybe I like Kimmel. I think he's a really good host of the show. I think he's certainly been the best host that we've had in like the last 10 years. Of which, like, he's hosted half of them probably, but the no host year did not work. The triple host of Regina Hall and the other two, Amy Schumer and whoever else I'm forgetting right now who the third host was that year, didn't work. Like, I think he's a good shepherd of the show, and I'm excited to see what Mulaney can do next year. I'll just go ahead and say it.
Calling your shot. Yeah, no, I mean, it did feel like somebody saw him at the Governor's Awards, right, where he gave a monologue where he hosted, I guess, and said, hey, yeah, we have to fit him into the awards here somewhere.
Yeah, it felt like they gave him the Governor's ball or the governor's awards to like at, like to be his test run, and they're like, holy cow, he was so good, we have to get him in. Like, we have to get him at the Oscars, he's so good, we can't wait till next year to have him on the telecast. And and look, they were absolutely right for it. He's probably the best presenter of the night, frankly, and we don't have to talk about Al Pacino, so we can move on.
Yeah, no, it seemed like from what I saw, Jimmy Kimmel did a good job. He kept the show moving. You know, that would be the thing with Mulaney. I mean, I guess, again, he was able to do the Governor's Awards. Obviously, he's going to bring the laughs. He's going to be funny. Can he do that part of the hosting gig as well? Probably so.
I think
they would be foolish at this point if they didn't give him a shot at it. But, you know,
he clearly wants it too, right? He clearly wants to host. Like, he wouldn't be doing this if he didn't want to be doing it. And as some people, you know, this is not an original thought, right? But I think you can see it in the Governor's Awards. You could see it talking about Phil. Obviously, he's poking fun at these things. But, like, you can only poke fun when you have such a love and attention to detail of the industry, right? And, you know, he was in The Bear last year. Like, he's done some acting. He's clearly close enough. He's, like, just the right amount of distance from the industry, right? And you, I mean, we saw it with, you know, Billy Crystal's, like, sort of run of hosting the Oscars in so many years. Like, you got to be... It helps to be just close enough in the industry to be knowledgeable, to be respected, and have that love for like what you're doing. And that's that balance is sort of a special ingredient that not everyone has, right?
Yeah. I think he's cut out for it. But, you know, it is nice to know that they have somebody like Jimmy Kimmel who's just kind of the safe choice that they can fall back on.
Totally.
If they agree. Need a reliable person.
And I think with that, I don't really have any more thoughts to add. Scott, any other last thoughts you wanna exercise before we wrap things up?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything that there was to cover. The Al Pacino thing was, you're right, it probably doesn't.
It's sad. It's very just sad. Well, I think we got to stop doing that. Like Liza Minnelli a couple years ago, Warren Beatty two or three times. Like it's not good for the show, and it's more than that. It's really sad that they're putting people out there, and they don't seem equipped to do it.
I do want to ask one question, and this is not meant to take us off on another tangent here at the end, but
sure.
Does the Academy hate Martin Scorsese? I think it's a question worth asking, right? You know,
hate him? No, revere him and respect him. I think that he's not necessarily someone who is revered and respected anymore, like maybe he was pre-2010s.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. It's just puzzling.
I mean, Spielberg too, right? I mean, Scorsese, because he gets so many nominations and he's had these bigger films maybe the last few years. But like, I think Spielberg and Scorsese are in the same camp.
Yeah. You know, it's just those two guys. Nobody has done more for the art form of cinema that they have. And that's what the Academy is supposed to be celebrating. And it just, I don't know. It strikes me as odd.
But haven't they already been celebrated though? Like, I mean, this is an interesting point, right? Like,
yeah, but I'm not saying, you know, that they haven't been, or that, oh, we need to give Killers of the Flower Moon awards for that reason. Yeah. But, you know, the Lily Gladstone thing rubs me the wrong way. That, you know, you have like the only other reference to it really made during the evening is like, oh, we have to have a joke about how long it was. And that the
same
thing.
True. It had an original song performance.
It had a song performance, but, you know, like you said, people were going to the bathroom during the song performances. They make a joke about how long it is. They did the same thing with The Irishman. The Irishman was also similarly shut out. You know, Scorsese, another person who took forever famously to actually get awarded an Oscar. And when he did, it was for, you know, The Departed, which was kind of a more straightforward film, if you will, than some of the others that he had made before that. So I don't know. It's just it is disappointing to see, but maybe it's just the types of films that he's making nowadays are just not what the Academy is interested in, right? I mean, you know, his last two films have been pretty nihilistic, I guess, if you will.
I'm not as dour about it, but I think it makes sense that like a new generation of filmmakers are getting more awards. Like these people are in their 80s. Like I don't think we can award them until they die. You know what I mean? Like that's just not, I don't think that's how culture like pushes forward and progresses. And I'm not making some like grand statement or sentiment or anything at all. Like I don't mean it like that. It's just, it makes sense to me, right? That Christopher Nolan is winning best director. Like it makes sense to me that people like, you know, people like him, like, are the ones in these conversations. Like it makes sense to me, even though I don't necessarily agree, it makes sense to me that like Chloe Zhao and like the Daniels, right? Like these are younger filmmakers winning the awards. Like they are the next, they are like the current generation, the next and current generation of filmmakers. And I don't mean to be like, oh, it's an honor to be nominated kind of thing, right? But like clearly his films are still well regarded. It got 10 nominations last night, right? Yeah. But do I agree that the Lily Gladstone thing rubs me the wrong way? Absolutely. No doubt about it. But I don't think that it's some like grand disrespect of like Martin Scorsese. I do think that he probably, I think he's frustrated a lot of people in Hollywood probably with how expensive and how sort of, you know, like how stubborn he is about producing movies the way he wants to produce them, which I think is fantastic from an artistic perspective and like us getting to watch his films. Like he's clearly made the movies exactly like how he's wanted to make them, and the only people who have empowered him to do that are people who are willing to throw bad money after good from a business perspective, like Netflix and Apple, to make to realize his vision. And if all of the other like mainstream studio people in town don't like that, like we shouldn't be surprised that he's not winning a bunch of awards about that. I think that that's like maybe the most like pessimistic view I could have of that read. But to me, it's also just like he was still nominated. Like he was still acknowledged as like one of a filmmaker who made one of the best five films from a directing perspective of the year. And I think it's very easy for us to get myopic about like if he's not getting awarded, then like the Academy doesn't respect him. But like frankly, it'd have been way crazier if Christopher Nolan didn't win last night and like Scorsese won, in my opinion. Like that would have been wild to me. Like that would have been like, that would have felt like an ultimate rejection of, you know, Christopher Nolan, for example.
Yeah. I'm not saying that should have happened. I just mean, I know. Maybe give it something, maybe just throw a sentence or two in Jimmy Kimmel to like acknowledge the greatness of the movie and not just, oh, hey, this was really
wrong. I mean, to be fair, he did do that, right? He did do that. And after the monologue, when he had this whole thing about Lily Gladstone and how she was about to apply to like be to work for the government and be like the murder hornet thing. And he was saying like, it's what a miracle it is that you got cast in this movie and had like such an incredible performance. So I do hear what you're saying. I mean, the joke just being like, could we not have made a joke about this? It's so bad. Like the joke is so dumb. It's not interesting. You didn't like just your spin on that joke didn't work any better than anyone else who tried it this year. And then you have the joke about the murder hornets, right? That like whether or not it's like funny, I don't really care. But like it blends like the respect for the art with like the humor that we hope for, and like that joke works better. But yeah, I mean, I think Spielberg and Scorsese are people whose influence within the Academy is waning. I think they still have a lot of respect for their abilities, but maybe it is odd that they are so universally being shut out with their films. But I just think that also like film culture from a general population sense has moved past them. I mean, and that's why, frankly, you know, Scorsese is weird because his movies have been streaming movies, but like that's why Spielberg's films are bombing at the box office. Just like plainly put, like, film culture, like general population film culture has moved past him.
Yeah, it's sad. It's a sad realization, I guess, but ultimately that is probably the explanation.
Yeah, I'm glad that we can still watch their movies in 2024, new films, and celebrate them. And I'm happy that they're being nominated as well, but it also at the same time makes sense to me that they're not necessarily being awarded in the same way. And, you know, I will say this as well. It's an honor, Bradley Cooper. It is an honor to be nominated. Just remember that. Just remember that. Everyone will be happier. All right. Jokes aside, I think that should do it for episode 267 of Some Like It Scott. Scott, where can people find you on socials?
I am at Scarvy Dent on all platforms.
And you can find me at sshelton2013 on Twitter, on Letterboxd, on Serialized. Don't forget to check out our podcast Patreon as well at www.patreon.com/mediaplugpods. If you can support us, we'd appreciate that. If not, that's okay. You can still find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and wherever else you listen to your podcasts, where we'd love it if you rated, reviewed, subscribed, told your friends, so that we continue to reach a broader audience. And finally, we really appreciate all of you for taking time to listen to us chat about the 96th Academy Awards. We'll be back next week with a little award show of our own. That is the 6th Some Like It Scott Awards. The 6th, Scott, isn't that crazy? We're basically as storied as the Oscars at this point. So come on over next week. Tune in. We should have friend of the pod, Paul Oyama, on with us once again to be talking about our award, personal awards for the year in cinema that was 2023. We hope you'll join us for that. But until then, for Scott Harvey, I'm Scott Shelton. We'll see you next time.